I'm Andy Howard from Remote Tech People. On this episode, you'll hear how Ben May has scaled the code company from Hervey Bay, Queensland to the world. Ben shares tips on culture, collaboration, teamwork, and scaling remotely. Enjoy. I'm Andy Howard from Remote Tech People, and joining us today is Ben May from The Code Company. Ben, welcome to the show.
Hey, Andy.
Thanks for joining us today. Now, Ben, The Code Company is a leading technical WordPress agency, one of only a handful, I think, of WordPress VIP agencies in this region. Can you tell us a bit more about what The Code Company does?
Sure. So we started a long time ago, back in the days of early WordPress, and over the years we've grown into a specialist in the media and publishing space, building publishing platforms powered by WordPress. So we work with media, publishing, content companies, all different shapes and sizes, and basically we use WordPress as a big piece of that, as at the core of the technology stack.
So publishing specialists, and you've said publishers of all different shapes and sizes. Could you give me some examples of the types of publishers that you work with?
Yeah, I mean, what's you know, I guess really interesting about our work is, you know, for something that feels incredibly siloed and niche, the amount of range of different people we work with on, you know, a week-to-week basis. So, you know, whether we're looking at somebody who, you know, like a pedestrian group that talks to, you know, a younger youth audience in the Australian market, to hercampus.com, which is a publication for girls going through college in the United States and is, you know, user-generated content and things like this, through to, you know, more enterprise or corporate applications where, you know, we're seeing the world of marketing and content kind of fusing a lot more and content being a play in part of that. So, you know, we're doing stuff for upstarts that are sort of trying to punch bigger companies that are trying to catch up with what more agile and smaller companies are working with. And yeah, it there's a ton of variation in what we're doing, but all at the end of it, it's all content that we're working with at the back end.
So it's all publishing. It just takes many different forms. And where are your clients based? You've mentioned the pedestrian group who you work with locally. I understand you also work with Nine, Mumbrella, some other large Australian publishers. Where are your clients based? Is it mostly in Australia? Do you have some overseas clients as well?
Yeah, we started, obviously, being an Australian firm, started here, and a lot of our work has come out of Sydney and Melbourne as well. So, you know, down in Melbourne, we have we've worked with Crikey and Private Media and those people down there. We've also worked a lot with Arts Hub and Games Hub and that group as well, and they're down in Melbourne. So we've got a lot of Australian-based clients. But over the years, you know, one of the things that we've found, which I think is probably we've proven ourselves wrong a little bit, but one of the things we found was, you know, we were hitting a ceiling in Australia of the kinds of clients we wanted to work with and just the sheer scale that the US represents for us. So we started expanding more into the US market and working with publishers over there. You know, a small publication in the state of California has still got a sample size twice the size of the entire Australian population. So, you know, we've grown over there. I think last time I looked about a year ago, we were sitting at about a third of our work coming from the US, and that's continuing to increase every day. We've started to scale a small team over there and sort of calibrating constantly what our footprint will look like as we, you know, take on that market as well as continuing to grow in the Australian market. And I think the thing we didn't realize is, you know, there's a lot of known clients to go after. And again, what I love about this industry is the unknown ones that come out of nowhere that are incredibly successful, healthy businesses that the mainstream or just regular, you know, people like you and me would never come across. But, you know, there's a community for, you know, professional coin valuers or something like that, and you know, have a huge market and, you know, also looking for help. So, yeah, there's plenty of work to go around.
I love that. Is that what you mean when you say you've maybe proven yourselves wrong a little bit? Do you mean you've been taken by surprise somewhat at just the scale of publishers out there in the world that need the sort of help that the code company provides?
Yeah, I think so. I think, well, you know, one of the oversimplistic things we thought through was, well, you know, we're already working with so many of Australia's largest media company or independent companies. So we sort of sit in the mid space. We're not working necessarily with the highest, largest brands. You know, we're a certain size and we sort of have a sweet spot. And we're also working with people who have sort of grown a bit and can afford to engage that, you know, expertise in a sort of scaling fashion. And yeah, I guess we probably thought at one point, well, you know, we've outgrown Australia. We need to move overseas. But both are true. We're both growing in the US and still continuing to have stuff that we never would have thought come out in Australia as well. So that keeps it exciting.
Absolutely. And you mentioned you've set up a team in the US. Can you talk me through where the code company staff are based?
Yeah, so in Australia, which is 80% of our team, we've got people all up and down the East Coast, as probably most of the population of Australia is really. So from Sydney to, I think we're probably the highest, to Hervey Bay. We did have some people up in Cairns, but yeah, up and down the coast, chunk in the Sunshine Coast, chunk in Brisbane, and a couple in Sydney as well. So our team's sort of spread up and down there. In terms of the US, we sort of worked backwards from order of need. So the most important role we wanted to have first was project management and kind of that point of contact for current work. From there, we then sort of went through the next most important thing is, you know, from a sales, business development, relationship perspective, someone who's available a bit more than just what I am, getting up early, which is fortunate that I'm an early person, so I, you know, I don't mind doing that, but that's not a long-term strategy. So the second hire has been more in that sales account management growth sort of umbrella. And then our third one will be something in technology, I guess, so, you know, a lead developer to have sort of that skeleton crew over there to represent us and the rest of the team that's back here doing the majority of the day-to-day.
So you have a distributed team across multiple countries. You have a distributed client base across multiple countries. Can you talk me through how you manage the collaboration both internally amongst the team and then also externally? How do you collaborate with clients that are based all over the place?
Yeah, I think one thing that we've done fairly well is pick what regions as well we want to work in and not sort of say we'll work with anyone everywhere. You know, anyone in Australia will know that you can't work with both someone in Europe and the US on the same day. It's a very long day, a very long time span to try and do both. So, you know, we've resisted and sort of pushed back when we've had, you know, people we want to work with in Europe or UK or wherever, or anywhere on that side of the planet, because it just doesn't work that we can do early, middle, and late shifts. So, one thing was, yeah, definitely restrict sort of North America and Australia, our two sort of main time zones we work with. We haven't wanted to build a full round-the-clock team and things like that. That's definitely, and I know people who do, it's definitely possible, but it's a whole different kettle of fish. In terms of like collaboration, I think that's one of the hardest things to manage is, you know, sort of replicating that whiteboard experience in a room and sort of working through ideas and brainstorming and things like that. And sometimes we'll try and do that if the opportunity arises that the team is close enough or the client's available to do it. We'll you know, sometimes we'll just physically all jump on a plane and go do a few days in a workshop. Great for relationship building, great for, you know, just getting through a ton of stuff quickly. But also doesn't work if we've got a team in Australia and you're in lockdown and can't get to the US, you know, you have to work through different technology that will allow you to do the job. So, you know, we've worked with a lot of different things and, you know, when you start early on, you go through, I don't know, the decision paralysis of so many different tools that are out there and the irony lost on how much time wasted on trying to find productivity apps and things to optimize productivity and perpetually looking and wasting time. So, you know, we've tried to keep the suite of tools we use to a minimum. You know, we can always try and experiment and the market changes. If we're looking at things like workshops and sort of discovery sessions and sort of those early days in an engagement, tools like Miro have been really good, where, you know, you can sort of either screen share or everyone's looking at the same thing and work through, you know, post-it noting and just sort of scribbling things down, uploading bits of documents and notes and stuff like that. And really to have sort of that loose, unstructured workspace to begin with, because sometimes anyone in any creative industry, when you start pulling at a thread, you don't know which way that thread's going to go. So having it all go into a Google Doc, you know, in A4 pages doesn't necessarily make sense sometimes, just the way the information may present itself.
Sure. And when you're using a tool like Miro to recreate that in-person whiteboard experience, how do you facilitate these workshops? Are you really taking that offline practice? So the same sort of methodology and approach that you'd use if the team's jumping on a plane and going to the US and running this in person, are you taking that same sort of facilitation and approach and literally just applying that online through tools like Miro?
Yeah, I think that the certain things you need to navigate that are a bit more different, you know, virtually versus physically. Sometimes it's a matter of calling out, you know, sort of ground rules around these sort of sessions and saying, you know, look, turn Slack off, turn mobile devices off, things like that. If we're here to do this, you know, it's going to be as good as the time you put into it. And if you're sort of just treating this like another Zoom session and, you know, multitasking or answering a question on Slack and out of the question, then it's going to result the same. You know, being digital, it does allow you to get away with those kinds of things. If you were sitting in a room together, it'd be a lot more noticeable if you were on Slack or replying to a few emails in the middle of a workshop. So, you know, understanding that and sort of just having that honest conversation, but also then being realistic about structuring that, you know, thinking that you can do 4 hours on Zoom is probably unrealistic and going to result in people drifting off or getting distracted. So, you know, we're constantly playing around with, you know, do we do more short bursts of sessions? Do a session, we'll go away, work on it, collaborate for an hour, come back, do another session, sort of break the day up, break the sort of screen fatigue up as well, than sort of sitting there doing that.
Is there any sort of format that you've uncovered there that works best for you so far? Like, say, doing an hour or so in this collaborative whiteboarding environment with your client and then breaking off as a team for an hour or maybe two and then coming back and regrouping with the client and pushing it along further. Is that sort of rhythm working for you, or is there any other approach that seems to work well remotely?
I think that's been the best blend of different things we've tried, is sort of that 2 to 3 sessions a day, more broken up rather than, yeah, the sort of monolithic ones where people will just be tuning out by the end of it, or just everyone looks like they just need to go sit in the sun to just wake up and come back to life again. So, yeah, I think it's knowing that what we can do online is very different to sitting in a room. What might take 2 days in an office may take a week online, and just having the permission that's going to happen. And then, you know, if we just be honest and say, look, we're going to have a few hours, people can go do whatever they need to, go do Slack, go do email, things like that. And then we're going to come back and, you know, having more bursts of guaranteed time rather than having unrealistic expectations that ultimately just let everyone down. So,
got it. And so workshops are one of those things where it sounds like sometimes they can take more time remotely than in person for all of these reasons. Is there anything from a client management or even a project production point of view that you've found where working remotely actually speeds things up rather than slows things down?
I think in terms of the ability to make things go faster remotely is definitely that people can work at different spaces. People have more autonomy than sort of, I guess, the traditional everyone does the same 9 to 5 and things like that. I guess Slack allows a developer or you know, any resource to really shut themselves off to the world and actually be head down and have some work done. So in terms of a collaboration, the ability to sort of tap someone on the shoulder or pick up on visual cues or you know, whatever sort of environmental cues there may be in those early days, once you start to get a bit of a rhythm, understand a project, understand a goal or a client or whatever else, the ability to sort of move at your own speed and just sort of be heads down and sort of control and manage your disruptions. If you're fortunate enough to be at home and, you know, have your own office or whatever else, once you turn Slack off and turn your emails off, you're kind of, you know, in a bubble, you can go and work as much as you want. So you've got anywhere between there and pure distraction to manage, you know, your own work and output for anything.
And in a productivity sense, is there anything that you've found has worked for the code company's staff or for you personally, just to maintain this high velocity, high productivity workday?
I think especially for, you know, businesses and because we work with businesses that are scaling, you know, things like chaos come naturally to that arena. We've been working with some people who refer to digital agencies as no-cos, which is a naturally occurring chaotic organization. And that's purely by the nature of the work that we do, that it is naturally occurring chaos. So it's our job to sort of manage and embrace the chaos, because at the end of the day, people don't come to us when everything's just perfect. There's a problem, or they need something done rapidly, or they're thinking it through at the same time. You've worked in agencies, you know all about it. So, you know, part of that I've always thought, you know, especially when we look at some of our more, you know, chaotic clients and chaotic just in the fact there's a lot of things going on, is having 1,000 kilometers between, you know, the business and actually someone who needs to get work done is actually a really great firewall sometimes, and being able to sort of restrict communications, because, you know, I've watched firsthand businesses that do have internal resources as well as work with us. Those internal resources are getting dragged into 60 different meetings. They're getting 5-minute disruptions in the hallway. The ability, especially for us being technical and primarily development, you know, there's charts and stats around, you see that, of, you know, that 5-minute interruption can result in 90 minutes of lost productivity by the time you get back into that flow state, things like that. So for us in development, having that firewall, being able to say, right, I'm working on something for the next 4 hours, turning off my notifications and just getting on with it, is probably the biggest thing. And I, it's often a benefit for us to say, look, your internal resources are having a efficiency problem because, you know, no one's safeguarding their time from the rest of the team. They're just getting, you know, pulled out in every direction possible.
It is a beautiful thing about remote work, just the space that pure distance can create, that level of isolation and being cut off from some of that inherent chaos that can consume the day-to-day if you're right there on the ground in the firing line. It's nice to have that protection. And are there any other, I guess, habits or tips that you've formed or the team has developed to just stay on track when working remotely? I mean, you're the managing director of the code company. You've got staff in multiple countries. Is there any shares from you just on how you manage to run a distributed workforce and maintain that visibility and help the whole operation run productively?
Yeah, I think any business, and I mean, we've always been remote in the sense we were never close to our clients. Like, you know, I'm in a regional area. None of our clients are in this area, let alone in this state, you know, for the last, you know, 5 to 10 years anyway. So as you have sort of, I guess, checks and balances of running the business, those checks and balances sort of have to be, you know, I guess, have a certain amount of trust built into them. A lot of people always, you know, when you talk to agency owners, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, you know, just would mind would explode when you talk about remote as this foreign concept. And, you know, you'd get questions like, well, how do you know anyone's doing any work and this sort of stuff, which, you know, is a very oversimplistic question to ask. But in reality, if work's not getting done, if clients are complaining that work hasn't been delivered, that's when you're going to know the work's not being done. So it's been an interesting, I guess, starting point that's helped a lot of people think about the future of work in that whole conversation, which is a whole conversation in itself of, you know, does 40 hours a week at a desk mean that you're working? Or if, you know, you can get something that was, you know, meant to be 10 hours done in an hour, is the, you know, the value has been created and things like that. But that's a whole different discussion. In terms of those checks and balances, I think it has to be built on trust and good faith that people are working on, you know, working what they're doing. Obviously, again, we work in software. We can see things like code being committed, even, you know, work in progress. Leveraging Agile and the most important parts for us around, you know, transparency and openness. We have stand-ups with our internal team, but also with our clients. So our clients will see what we're working on today. If they knew how to, they could look in GitHub or Bitbucket or wherever the work is. but also just, you know, it's essentially that feeling of like we're in the same office together. You've engaged us for the next 6 months to work side by side building something. We're not going to go off, you know, that old agency model of a PM's going to take all the notes, they're going to copy that, send it to a developer, no one's ever going to talk to each other and hope for the best. Everyone's in the same room together. So if you're not working, then it's going to come, that's going to come out pretty quickly and pretty obviously. But it's also just a better way to work and sort of follows our whole open source, open transparency ethos about everything when we're working together.
Great share. And how have you managed to foster the culture of the code company remotely? You've been distributed since day one. I feel like you've been in business for over a decade by this point. How have you managed to foster and grow this culture in a remote first environment?
Yeah, I think in the earliest days, like the first couple of employees, we were all in the same office, like in those really early days. And I guess we were working remotely with our clients because we weren't going in for face-to-face meetings and we weren't sort of popping in. So we were sort of, the agency was remote, but we were face-to-face. I think anything in this world is finding sort of people who share similar values and understand why we're going a certain direction. And you know, sort of have been able to have, I guess, that core team, the old guard of the business that was there in the early days that has been able to sort of help foster that and grow that as we've brought other people in. A lot of people have come in, I think they've all got different definitions of what sort of success from this looks like, whether it's, you know, going surfing at lunch or being able to walk the kids to school in the morning versus doing what it like working the days or the hours or whatever else that sort of works around their life. So I think we've been pretty good at finding people along the way who buy into that and see, you know, I don't want to have to drive 3 hours a day in and out of the office or whatever else and the trade-offs that affords. So I don't think we've had too many issues along the way really with people buying that sort of dream. And I think part of that is sort of seeing it being lived out by the rest of our team. You know, we use things like in Slack, a whereabouts channel where people will sort of check in the morning if they're off to do the school run or off, you know, off for 2 hours. It's not a business of like 25 individual contractors who are all siloed away from each other. It's sort of all very collaborative open forum. So, you know, when you see, you know, me going out for an hour or, you know, someone else in sort of the management team off to pick their kids up or, you know, and come back for an hour at night to finish off for the day, you understand like that culture is very open and transparent and it's not sort of one set of rules for some or others. And there's no resentment, I would hope, of people, you know, well, I'm here working, I'm stuck here, I can't leave, but, you know, so-and-so is going to the gym, you know, or whatever else, because everyone's got that flexibility. And ultimately, if they can be accountable to themselves and make it work, then who are we to micromanage their day and sit over their shoulder that they're working 9 to 5?
Yeah, it sounds like everyone at the code company feels like they have the permission of flexibility, and that sort of permission and behavior and culture is top down, and you're sharing this through your whereabouts channel in Slack. That's a feels like a really nice way to make it very clear and transparent that flexibility is allowed here, and it's not just allowed, but it's embraced.
Yeah, if you play it back the other way around, as long as you're attending meetings that are being scheduled, if you've got a meeting with a client and you're showing up to that, the work that's getting assigned for a day or a week or a month is getting delivered. Doesn't matter if you're doing that on, you know, middle of the night or weekends or whatever else, you know, all of that is kind of arbitrary. So you've got that flexibility. If you want to take a Friday afternoon off because you're just not feeling it and you'd rather go and watch, you know, TV, then do that. And if you want to catch up the next day or catch up the next week, you know, as long as those things are being managed, then, you know, as long as people have a bit of autonomy and accountability, then they're free agents, I guess, in that sense, which I think is a pretty obvious thing in hindsight when you look back at the work's getting done. What benefit does it mean to say you have to push through a migraine and work all afternoon because we need to get the work done or, you know, whatever else?
And how often do all of you meet up in the same place, or how regularly are team members in the same room together?
So we've still got a couple of little pods that will probably catch up occasionally, and that's, you know, people who are geographically close. Before COVID, it was probably a bit of a different thing. The last year or two has been a bit of a logistical problem of trying to organize things, but we've tried to do sort of two main sort of catch-ups a year where everyone's in the same room, and whether that's all, you know, picking the most central capital city and everyone shows up there for two or three days to just, even sometimes just to co-work. Sometimes we sort of tried to do a mid-year co-working session, just, you know, a few days of going to lunch and that sort of stuff, as well as little projects and things like that. And then sort of towards the end of the year, sort of what we called like workshops where, you know, people are showing what they've been doing or sort of, you know, latest technology or software or, you know, whatever that may be. And just sort of using those as a few days to sit back and share and reflect on things that have worked and not.
Nice. Good habit. Ben, just in closing, any thoughts from you around the future of work and potentially how the code company might look to shift the way you're working remotely over the next year or so?
Yeah, I think a lot of good stuff's happening in that space and sort of decoupling work from, you know, the industrial revolution kind of concept of what work is, and how we do that. You know, people who are moving to 4-day week but just still doing their 37 and a half hours over 4 days versus 5 days and sort of having that flexibility. You know, as a professional services firm, cutting a 20% of your hours sort of just means cutting 20% of your billable hours and revenue. But, you know, there's lots of different ways coming into sort of more commonly accepted by clients that aren't sort of scaring them off. Obviously, as an agency, if you just say, you know, oh, we're just a functioning chaos business where everyone does whatever they want, it doesn't feel very stable and dependable. And that's something that if you're providing a vital service, you want to definitely emulate that you are a dependable partner to work with for the time to come. But I think the confluence of COVID has been a level set for a lot of businesses who have realized a lot more can be done hybrid or fully remote. I think hybrid's a great mix of that, especially if businesses are doing that right for the right reasons. But also what can be done fully remote, realizing that, you know, actually we don't need to work with someone who's down the street. You know, that doesn't create any less risk in a project or an engagement. And that, you know, the saying I heard a while ago, which has stuck with me when I explained to people why we go down this path of remote, is talent is distributed, opportunity is not. So, you know, 15 years ago, if you were a brilliant software developer, you had to move to Sydney or Brisbane or Melbourne to be employed and be paid sort of what you were worth. If you lived in a small regional town, you know, middle of New South Wales, there's not a lot of high-end software engineering jobs. So businesses that can capitalize on the fact that talent is everywhere, there's not just talent in major cities, talent exists everywhere. That's where you're going to be able to, you know, take advantage of the other problem we have at the moment, which is workforce shortages and finding suitably qualified people. You know, and if we're all looking in the same places, then we're going to drain those wells. But if we're starting to look outside that, that's where more opportunity will lay for sure.
Absolutely. Ben, that's been a very insightful discussion. Thank you so much for your time today.
Pleasure. Great to chat.
Thank you for listening to the Remote Tech People podcast. To stay up to date with new episodes and show notes, visit remotetechpeople.com.au. Catch you on the next episode.